thank you for downloading and listening to this podcast from Celtic Underground. There is plenty of free content still available on CelticUnderground.net and on iTunes, Amazon Music, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. We now have a premium service on theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where subscribers will get fresh content every week, and paid subscribers will get premium content, either written, audio, or video, delivered straight to their inbox, or available on the Substack app. Anyway, enough of me. This is Andrew Smith with Tony Hamilton.
Welcome to Celtic Underground, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Tony Hamilton, the CEO of Celtic Charity Foundation. Tony, great to have you.
Thanks very much, Andrew.
Yeah, and plenty of us have had sleepless nights and have sleepless nights at this time of the year, worrying about results. But I would imagine you've got sleepless nights worrying about the day after the season finishes, because you've got this game, like the club's got this game against Dortmund on May the 26th. Get your tickets now.
I tend to worry about a lot of things that I can have no effect on whatsoever. In football matches are, right at the very heart of that. And this season has been up or down. We got over the line last night in absolutely spectacular form. I left Celtic Park about 12:30 and I was back in 8:00 this morning, and it is the happiest place in the entire world.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So that's obviously helps. It helps us with the game. The game sales are strong at the minute,
yeah,
and we'll hopefully get a real push over the course of the next week or so, just leading up to the day after the cup final.
But it must be a massive undertaking. Does it get any easier, year to year?
It's actually, I was looking back in it, and we did a few of these in my first few years. We did one with Stelian Petrov in 2013. Stelian had been ill. I went down to see him at Aston Villa at the time. His prognosis wasn't great then. He's an exemplar for everything in his life now. He's just an incredible human being. He's the loveliest man in the world. And we did really well with that game. We had Henrik and Lubo in 2017, which was the day after the Invincibles treble.
Yeah.
The stars aligned that day. I think we'd said to Henrik and Lubo, do you want to come to Hampden with us for the Scottish Cup final? And Henrik said, I'd love to go into the Cup final. And Lubo says, I've got my mates coming from Slovakia. Could you just get us a round of golf at Archerfield?
Well, that was Lubo.
And I thought, well, fair play to you. So he went and played golf. We did really well with that as well. And we've had another couple where we've been in the sort of 30,000 to 35,000 category. Yeah. And it's the same, to answer your question, Andrew, it's the same amount of preparation that the foundation team do to put these games out, whether we're going to sell, a dozen tickets or 60,000 tickets. It's the exact same process.
But is it your big ticket in terms of what the foundation does, in terms of is this your biggest kind of event?
It depends what the metric is. If the metric is revenue, then it's probably not, because we have bigger events away from Celtic Park.
Right.
With fewer people, because the economy away from Celtic Park is significantly different.
Right.
So, like for like, we have bigger events in London and in New York, because the economy is really, really strong there, and it isn't here. But in terms of who we are as an organisation and what the club does and how it buys into this and how it drives it and supports it, it's the biggest event to have a game at Celtic Park. Absolutely, it's the biggest event.
And what kind of buy-in do you get, when you're phoning up players and you're asking them, will you come and play? And how does it...
I mean, you and I have been there, or
we'll go to that.
This is not our first rodeo, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've got relationships. I've got relationships that go back to the mid-90s now. So,
including me.
Exactly. So you get to know people, you get to develop relationships with people.
You know who'll play ball.
You build up trust in people, and it's an honour for the majority of players that we phone. They're absolutely delighted to come back.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right, that you and I see players and we've got a relationship with them. When you and I worked in media there, we've got a relationship with people.
Yeah.
And they come in and they're brand new and they'll do anything for you. And then they're under a wee bit of pressure and maybe results aren't going well and it becomes a wee bit more difficult. And the relationships are up and down at that point.
Three amigos, guys.
That's the best example. This was the mid-90s, right? So 90-something, 96, 97. I'm running, doing a wee bit for you in The View and the programme, but I'm running this match day. I'm the half-time guy
Aye.
And I'm also doing the premium rate hotline. So I interview Tommy every morning.
Jeez, because right? I took over for me because it took me 64 takes one time to do.
So I'm doing the premium rate hotline. So this is pre-internet. People phone up and they hear me interviewing whoever it is or bringing the day's news, which was pretty much the same as yesterday's news, if I'm honest, right? Paying 39 pence a minute for the privilege. Yeah. Anyway, so there's a contract issue with Pierre Van Hooijdonk, right? So I say to Fergus, what's the story with Pierre's contract? Is he getting a new deal? Is he getting renewed? And because that's what you and I as Celtic supporters are interested in, right? We want to know what's happening. And he gave me a sort of nondescript, typical Fergus answer, right? So, and then I'm at training, interviewing somebody at training, and Pierre says, you speak to Mr. McCann about me. You shouldn't speak about me, right? Took the huff. And I explained to him, but since Pierre left, he's a perfect example of this. Yeah. My relationship with him is absolutely fantastic now.
Right.
Because I think what happens is people come, they're under a bit of pressure, they're trying to develop their career, and they don't realise what this football club is really. They don't fully understand the extent of it until they're not here any longer.
Yeah.
So it's great for them to come back. People love coming back. That was the longest answer in the world, apologies.
No. I suppose people love, they love happy endings in a way. And coming back, it gives everybody a happy ending. I mean, I always wondered about, like, I know I'm going off at a tangent here, but Davey Hay, you know, like the way he was treated by the club, not once, not twice, but three times. But I remember when he was packing his bags that night after Jock bagged him and he was walking past us, I remember in that office. And I went, what's happening, David? You know, and he genuinely had the bin bag and all that. He said, oh, that's me. I'm away. Get rid of me. And I was nearly greeting and all that. And I said, David, they can't do this to you. They can't do this to you. Can't do this. And he went, it's fine. He said, I've had worse sightings. You know, it was like, there he is. Here he is now. The ambassador and all that. But that's just what a great guy.
Over the course of the last few years, the club have appointed a really small number of ambassadors.
Yeah.
And he is one of them, and he should be. And he is a great ambassador in the true sense of the word for the football club. So you're right. You know, it always comes full circle at Celtic.
Yeah, and talking full circle, but this is what it's a question people will genuinely ask. How do you become CEO of the Celtic Charity Foundation? Now I kind of know, like for full disclosure purposes, me and Tony have known each other for 30 years and was even your best man at your wedding, such like. So, like, I know the kind of the backstory to an extent, but to try and explain that.
I mean, I had a career for 20 years for the mid 90s to about 11 years ago, which took me, every day was a privilege, and I mean that sincerely. If I don't say another sincere thing, I mean that
sincerely, folks.
Every day at Celtic is a privilege, and some of the stuff that's happened recently has been a genuine privilege, and I'll never ever take it for granted. But I'd had a journey, and I had probably reached the end of that. I was, you know, running the media and marketing thing at the football club. I had probably done enough that, you know, could have done me some change. I had an option to leave at that point to go and do something else with my life, and an opportunity presented itself for me that took what Fergus had set up, which was Celtic Charity Fund, and take a department of the football club, which was the foundation as a department of the club, and put the two things together and set up Celtic FC Foundation.
Right.
And we did that in 2013. and I knew nothing about the space. I knew everything about the club's history and who we were and where we came from, but I knew absolutely nothing about the space. And 11 years later, I'm still learning. I'm still learning how things work. And we've kicked that on in the past 11 years. And, you know, everybody's got a view about charity, but I think through what we've managed to do because of the support that we get has made a significant, a meaningful difference to a lot of people's life.
Yeah.
It's not, we don't talk about corporate social responsibility at Celtic or the foundation. It's not on the agenda. It's not, you know, we're not driven by look how good Celtic is. It's none of that. It's about how can we engage with people? How can we offer them a way to, you know, to help them into work or help them with addiction or help them live with dementia or provide a hot meal, which we do 4 times a week now. So all of this stuff will continue because of events like this game against Borussia Dortmund Legends on the 26th of May. So we do those things so that we can do the things in Glasgow, in Edinburgh, in London, in Ireland, and some international stuff as well. So that's the driver for us. That's the motivation.
But how would you see, I mean, if anybody at the Green Brigade would ever dare watch Celtic Underground, they could be on here and say, ah, this is just, I'm not saying it's brand washing because Celtic don't have a brand that needs to be cleaned up, but it's brand buffing up.
I absolutely refute that completely, Andrew, if I'm honest with you. This is not, it's never been fabricated for Celtic. The football club was formed for a specific purpose, right? It was formed on the back of and Gorta Mór, this influx of Irish immigrants in Glasgow that weren't welcome. I'm telling you,
I feel as if the audience already
know this as well, but that's who we are as an organisation. And then here's the rub, right? So when we get really good at football, that was pushed to the side, right? So this is the part that I talk about in a whispered voice.
I know, 1897, you know.
Absolutely, right. So we accept that's what happened. And then Fergus came in the mid-90s, and he did two things. He set up the Boys Against Bigotry campaign, which we both remember. And he set up what was then Celtic Charity Fund, and he brought that back to us. And Celtic Charity Fund continued right up to Celtic FC Foundation in 2013. So this is where we've came from. It's who we are. We believe in it wholeheartedly. It's not about brand. It's not about promoting the brand. It's about trying to bring meaningful change for people who need help, whether they are, you know, local people or refugees or whatever the circumstances are. And we start that, our concentration is in our local area in the north and east of Glasgow. In terms of what people put into this and what they do for it and what they contribute to it and how much they believe in it. And you take any population of 30 people or more, and you will get, you know, we say we are all faiths and none and we're a broad church and insert your own cliche here. But that's who we are as a football club. If you look at that population, the match day attendance, you've got a real spectrum of views on everything.
Yeah.
It's not one size fits all.
Yeah.
So the foundation for sure is apolitical. It's not, it doesn't matter to me. The people that we open the doors to, who come from the local area 4 times a week, who come in and get a hot meal and they're welcome there, I don't care if they're football fans. I don't care if they're Celtic fans.
Yeah.
If they need help and we can offer help, then, you know, why would we not? So I'm not interested in politics at work. It's not anything that we discuss. And we've got people who have maybe got different views for you and might have different views for me. That's life, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll not labour this, but my final point in this, look, the kind of neo-Marxist in me, you know, I'm struggling with these issues myself now, you know, because of the way that my life's changed and the job I'm in now. But the neo-Marxist in me says charities are taxing the poor. Okay, in this particular instance, the charity is a tax on the supporter, because it's not really the club that provide the funds for it. It's supporters coming to these events.
Not true, right? The biggest single contributor to the foundation is the football club. So I'm employed by the football club. I'm not employed by the foundation. So my costs, as an example, are covered by the football club. The facilities we use at the park are covered by the football club. The kit that we use is covered by the football club. So there's a million things that are covered by the football club. They're the biggest single contributor. And then the supporters, whether they are supporters locally, whether they're supporters in Ireland or in London or wherever they are in New York, have got a choice whether they support the work that we do, if they believe in it, or they might support some of the other things that are going on. And we don't, the foundation doesn't own charity at Celtic. I've said this before, right?
Right.
There's a scheme of other things. The supporters clubs, and there are thousands of them across the world, are raising funds locally for local causes. There is the Cano Foundation bringing kids. There's the collections that the Green Brigade do, the food collections for local food banks. There's a whole scheme of things going on. And it's a choice whether you support a charity or more than one charity. It's entirely up to you.
Yeah, yeah. And you think you can...
But it's not a tax. I think that's unfair to say it's a tax.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was extending the analogy in the sense of, you know, because I suppose it's like charities are a kind of, you know, because you have to put your hand in your pocket when they... Obviously, a lot of charities are in areas where the government should be, where, you know, we should have it at the top level. Like people, you know, I got in trouble in my last job because they were raising money for a dialysis machine. They were doing a charity run, and I sent out an email, and unfortunately I pressed send to all, right? And it went to the CEO and all that. Like, and I was ranting about charities attacking the poor. I said, it shouldn't require somebody to do a bit of face painting and an egg and spoon race, you know, for somebody to get dialysis.
What's happening here at the minute and why people need help, right? It's government's fault, or it's the council's fault, or it's business's fault, or, you know, I think my approach to this is that we're trying to address some things that are wrong in society. This is, you know, because we can play a small part, and as a small part, in trying to address some of that, then we are happy to do that, happy to engage with that.
Yeah.
But I don't get involved in the debate about whether it's, I have a view, personal view, you know, but I don't get involved in the debate. This is what's happening here for us in society is a society issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And it needs addressed by society and all its constituent parts.
Yeah.
Including you, including me as an individual, and including people who've got influence, and the football club has influence.
Well, this is it. I suppose maybe it opens doors, because I've probably moaned at you before about this. I used to say, well, why don't I give my money directly to some of the organisations you help? And it's like, because when the Celtic names, that's when... So the name is attached, and then it's an amplification, isn't it?
But we're not a funder necessarily for third-party charities. We're running 23 projects.
Yourselves?
So.
Right.
And we're doing some other bits and pieces. The Christmas Appeal, for example, which might do £300,000 a year. We support families, and we support 25 or 30 organisations. But beyond that, and through COVID, we helped a lot of organisations, over 100, right? £2.5 million, because they had boots on the ground, they could get to people quickly. But Celtic FC Foundation isn't set up to fund other organisations.
Right.
It's set up to, we employ people to work with people who are marginalised, young offenders, for example. We get young people, we've been doing this for 10 years, it's funded through Proceeds of Crime, scheme called Cashback for Communities.
Oh, yeah.
We work in three prisons. The team go and visit the prisoners. When they get released, they come to us for 12 weeks. And our job really is not to put them into employment, although, you know, we do aim to do that for some people, but it's really to keep them out of prison. and we address some of the reasons that put them into prison in the first place.
Yeah.
So we do that. We've got the resource. We've got a small team, but we've got a competent resource who are specialised in that. We've got a trauma counsellor, for example, who deals with some of the issues that might have put this young person in prison in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's ongoing at the minute. There's a ton of stuff that clearly you don't know a great deal about.
Oh, like, no, I know about it, but like, I'm giving you the platform to talk about it. You know, and I have obviously had a career change and all that, so I'm thinking definitely myself, I thought, if I get any a job and for the job I'm in now or whatever, like, and I can make a difference to one person, that's all I want. You know, if I can somehow just make any kind of difference, you must have made, you know, you must be able to look, be a litany of like examples of where you can genuinely feel you've made a difference. It must make you, you know what I mean? It really give you something.
But that's only possible because all of these different parts of the population have came together and decided to support what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's supporters, supporters clubs, supporters associations, corporate organisations, maybe individuals who've done well, or the football club itself, the staff at the club, whoever it is, we get support, we bring all that support together from all of these different parts and we channel it into trying to deliver these projects.
Yeah. I mean, what's given you the greatest satisfaction?
I think through
COVID. Or what's the highlight, you know what I mean?
Through COVID, to be able to respond quickly, to be agile enough to say,
I did know about that, by the way.
We can get it to the right people quickly.
Quickly.
And we know how it's going to be spent, and we know there's not going to be any waste. That was hugely important. I love the Christmas appeal because it brings normality for a lot of families. We could do it 10 times the size, right? Easily.
Which is pretty harrowing in itself.
I like, I like stuff that works, and it doesn't always work. Sometimes we get it wrong and we need to go back and look at it again.
Right.
But you need to keep doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, do people still remember you for your previous incarnations at Celtic and the Sensei? Yeah. Like, was it Hamden you started?
In 94, 95, people still remember me for getting thrown out of pubs in the Gallagate.
Right.
But people still say to me, you're the half-time guy.
Yeah, that's what I've got to say. Is that still something that the Celtic does, probably?
I tell you, I remember dates. I struggle with names, but I always remember dates and numbers. And but the last time I was the half-time guy, actually, was the 6th
October 2002. 6th
October 2002. And we played Rangers, and we drew three each.
That kind of cost Celtic the league.
Henrik scored an absolute screamer with his left foot. I think Mikel Arteta had scored a good goal at the other end as the first goal. So that was the last time. So that's 22 years ago nearly, right?
Poor Rob Douglas, I don't think he'd won his great games, did he?
No, I met him at another charity do recently, actually. He's a great guy, a lovely man, actually, Robert. Do you know that? He's got a heart of gold.
No, he is. But as I say, there was a few kind of high-profile mistakes that season, which...
I mean, that was the season, 2002-03... We were talking about it last night, heading down to Kilmarnock when we were coming back to Kilmarnock that day, and we'd played well, and then Rangers had Dunfermline at Ibrox, and that was the one that Chris Sutton had went on.
It was, aye.
And never missed anybody. He never hit the post that day.
Daft. It was daft.
It was very different last night. It was spectacular last night, actually.
Yeah. And I mean, does it still give you as much a kick, the kind of football side, like...
Absolutely. I mean, it's just incredible. I love this club. I love the team. I love supporting the team. It's just, I love to see Celtic winning.
Yeah. We didn't see
and
much.
I say this as a father of six, Andrew, and I probably shouldn't, but probably a few things make me happier than Celtic winning.
Yeah, I know what you mean. When it's good, you know.
That sets the tone for everything else in our lives, right?
Yeah. It always has, my wife always says, your whole life revolves around Celtic games because you remember things and the trigger is always what was happening with Celtic. It's just something you can't eat. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
2002-03 was it was a great journey, right? It was a terrific journey. And it ended with nothing. It ended with disappointment. A bigger disappointment was 2005 in Motherwell. That was, I remember interviewing Martin O'Neill after that, or years later actually, for the history film that we made.
Which he kindly had me on for.
I did. I interviewed 99 people. I was running out of people, which is what I asked you.
But you had the clip bits because I was too critical of certain board members.
The editor's decision is fine, you should know that. But I remember speaking to him about this and about Seville, because people talk about Seville, right? We go to Seville.
Yeah.
And Henrik scores two goals, and I think it was his 200th goal, was his second goal, actually, out of the 242. But Motherwell in May 2005 was, for Martin and for us as supporters, was much more painful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hugely. He said, I've spoke to him about it as well. I says, I don't think I've really ever got over it.
I'll never get over it, he says.
Yeah. No, that's the horrible thing in a way. Like, sometimes the kind of, the real kind of agonising moments live with you longer than the joyous ones, not? Or is that just me? Is that just...
That's probably true.
No, like, so. You know what I mean? No.
I like to celebrate the successes as well. And there's been plenty of them. Throughout a 13.
My God, when you think when I was at Celtic for 8 years and saw two trophies. 8.5 years, two trophies.
97, 98, the 9th of May, 98, and the 26th.
No, I wasn't there for that.
Oh, were you not?
I wasn't there for that. I was there. I was only there for the Scottish Cup. And
27th of May, 95, I think.
Yeah.
27th of May.
Scottish Cup in 95 and the League Cup in 97. I always
the
remember.
League Cup in 97. People was Ibrox, huh?
It was Ibrox. It was great. And welcome back to the park. Coca-Cola was 95. That was the Wraith Rovers one, remember?
No, it was the Coca-Cola.
Was it still the Coca-Cola?
Still Coca-Cola, because Tom Boyd gave me his green Coca-Cola hat after that.
Oh, right. No, because it was. I remember the Coca-Cola in 94, you know, it was hellish.
That was Ibrox as well.
That was Ibrox as well, yeah. And I also remember, you know, a day I'll treasure, and it sounds daft, and... Don't upset you a little bit. Going down with your dad, like when we got the train down to...
Wales.
Yeah.
And we played 500 outside Cardiff Castle, remember?
Yeah.
And then we went to this wee restaurant and it was Laurel and Hardy themed, and we were brought up with Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah. I've still got a picture, I think it's me kind of doing that.
And this is, again, pre-internet, so the music was great. It wasn't Laurel and Hardy music, but it was like standards for the late 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
So my dad would have been a young man at the time, and I wrote to the restaurant and said, what's the music? And they sent me a cassette of the music. And the restaurant, I've been back in Cardiff, the restaurant's long gone, right? But I thought that was really, really nice of them.
It was.
And I made a copy put it on a CD, I think, at the time, and gave my dad a copy. And I've still got it. I've still got the music. It was amazing, actually.
See, but it's even amazing to think how... It's not. I don't mean this corporate. I don't mean it in a kind of pejorative way, but if you remember that day, we managed to hitch a lift back in the plane, the private charter plane. These things just wouldn't happen now for anybody. It's got, you know, like Tommy Burns would let us travel in the team bus.
It's different now, so, you know, the culture at the football club is very different.
Everywhere. I don't just mean it's Celtic.
You know, some of the things that you and I had today when we worked here at the time, we wouldn't expect people to do now, and we don't expect people to do now. It's just different. People are treated differently now.
Yeah.
It was just the culture of the time, right? So I'm not making any comment on it. It's just how it was.
Yeah. But it's like, you know...
But I remember we were in Austria, right? We were in Austria and...
careful where you're going here.
Tyrrell Innsbruck. I remember a couple of things about it. I remember you and I went up. The media pack had went to the pub, and you and I had decided to go up the cable car.
Yeah.
Franz Klammer had won his...
Franz Klammer, yeah.
And I remember the guy Falco, who had a big hit with Rock Me Amadeus.
Yeah.
He was the half-time turn at the game.
He was.
But I was getting back with the team the next morning after the game, and you were making your own way, right? So we were at a hotel at
Okay,
the
okay,
airport. You were at a
okay.
hotel at the airport, and the hotel shook about 6 o'clock in the morning. You and I were sharing the room, actually, and you woke up, and the hotel shook, and you're like, "What was that? What was that noise?" And I thought, that was your plane, Andrew, flying over the
I had to go home via about two countries, and it took me the best part of a day. Because I turned up, and I'd perfected crying in front of, service desk. That was different as well. And they would always give me a later flight for nothing. And I started, I was getting the tears. I should have been an actor, not getting the tears ready to go and all that. And because I was always half cut, because I admit that's why I missed, like the tears, you can be emotional and all that. And and I've got to go home. They went, well, that'll cost you 200. So it's like, what? Like, because I used to be able to get, they would just book you in another flight. British Airways desks were the best for it. They were the best for it.
Change days, huh?
I know, you can't do that now. Do you remember when we went to Batumi and I lost my passport and I just said to the guy at the security and all that, says, look, I'm supposed to be on that flight. I can't find my passport or my ticket, but you've got to let me on that flight. And the guy said, okay, let me through. I ran through. I realised I had no money. I had to get a taxi. I only got there 5 minutes before it was going to fly. And it was like, I'd have been really screwed. That was Batumi. We went to Batumi and then we went to Istanbul. So I was in Istanbul. And I thought, I'd only $10 in my pocket. I just said to the taxi driver, I hope that's all right. You can just get it changed. And I got on. I got on and it was George Douglas. And I said, why the hell are you keeping my passport and keeping my ticket? He said, no, I didn't. I didn't. I gave you. I said, no. He said, check your. All right, it's here. So I didn't even need to show a passport or a ticket. I'm running,
That's a
running.
change as well, now.
That's a change. Modern life isn't for me, Modern life really isn't for me. But I mean, was it you? Do you have a sin to answer for? Do you have to apologise for? Were you involved in getting the kind of tribute acts in the Hampden?
So,
If people remember them.
my approach to this is that I take the blame for everything and the credit for nothing, right?
Right.
However, in this occasion, my only contribution to that was to introduce them.
Was it Peter McLean?
It was our friend in Brazil, Peter
Yeah,
McLean,
yeah.
right?
And we love you, Peter.
Who I hear from every day, right?
Yeah.
And he had booked them, but I remember the Rod Stewart lookalike.
Ooh.
You actually look more like Rod Stewart than this guy. Anyway, it was at Hampden and we were playing Kilmarnock and he was a bit edgy during the
Especially
warm-up and
Kilmarnock.
the cops had said to me, you need to keep him in check, right? So we introduced him and then he was dressed as Rod Stewart, but he ran to the Kilmarnock fans and ripped his shirt open and he had a Celtic strip on and
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
giving it some of that. And the police were like that to me. We told you that's your fault. But some of them were just mental.
Oh yeah, I remember the obvious one was it used to be the Sunday Mail just used to leave a page free for
I
for every
remember
Celtic home game.
Cher one as well, I think.
The share one eye.
And there might have been a. Would there have been a Tina Turner one? And why would there be?
I don't was that was that may have been a Tina
But
Turner.
I don't remember.
I'm sorry if they any what they
Listen,
have said, they were universally
it was
awful.
different, right? The stuff was different. It was fun.
Yeah. Do you think that you can have that kind of fun now?
I think we do have that fun. It's just different. It's changed again. We've got live music now for some games. Liam McGrandles before the Rangers game at the weekend
Yeah,
was brilliant,
he was
actually.
good.
I mean, he is brilliant, but he was particularly
Yeah,
brilliant at the
he
weekend.
really hit the right chord,
And
if
everybody
you
was
pardon the
into it.
phrase. Yeah.
Everybody was into it. So.
Do you know what gets me? I know you're not involved necessarily in the match, the operations or anything, but why can they know why they know allowed on the pitch or why they know seem appear on the pitch now? Because it's quite awkward for family and friends. See if you can't quite see the screens.
I don't know. I know for the UEFA games why, but I don't know. But maybe that's a better position for filming them. I don't think it makes any difference.
This is, we're talking to people about their kind of Celtic journeys. Like, what do you remember about growing up as a Celtic sport? What do you remember about your firsts, for instance? Or?
So I remember my brother Michael, who succeeded me as the half-time guy for a number of years.
He was better.
I know, he was better. he's one of my favourite people in the whole world, actually.
Yeah, yeah, right. He's
a lovely, lovely man.
Both of us have been great brothers.
He's probably no a football guy, if I'm honest with you, right? Not really his thing. But he took me to my first game. It was October 1975. We were playing Hibernia and we were getting beat 2-0. It was foggy. The match got abandoned. Him and I, ironically, ended up on the pitch with like half of the Rangers end that day, right? Everybody ran onto the pitch at the end of the game.
Because it was abandoned?
Uh-huh. And that was my very first game. That's what I remember.
You ended up on the pitch. Is there something you got? And then, even you got the job, did you think, my God, my first experience?
The two were on the pitch that day. Him and his pal, I think, we went to the game. And then I remember, so I would have been 8 then, in 1975. And then in 1978, my father and his pal took me to Jock Stein's testimonial.
Right, yeah.
And then by 79, when I started secondary school, I was going to home games on my own.
Right.
Because we lived a couple of miles away.
Oh, so right. I wasn't allowed. I mean, we're roughly the same age, but
I could walk. I went, and then I joined, when I learned to drive in the early 80s, I joined the car club as part of the supporters association. So I was working during the day and I was DJing at night. I joined the car club, London Road Supporters Association, and I would get a match ticket for away games, and I would just drive to the games. So
right.
I started going.
So did you
games.
Take other people? I didn't.
No, because I was always had to get back for a job. I was working doing somebody's wedding or whatever it was. But so from about 1983-84, I was at most away games for them.
Right. And when I met you, I suppose, were you already doing it? Because it was a quiz, wasn't it, for the kind of half-time, the things that you were doing? That's what you asked me,
For the programme, and then I remember you berating me in your usual charming style, Andrew, about not paragraphing properly and, you know, not condescending at all, actually.
Well, you come in and, tell you, you'd
I never lacked confidence.
You had a lot of front.
And then I did some stuff for you again for the View, and then I managed to get a job, which was effectively bringing all the wee parts I was doing together, including the premium rate hotline thing.
That was muddy.
And then it kicked on from there, you know.
Were you told as well about you weren't allowed to give the score and all that? Like you had to wait 40 seconds before you even mentioned any kind of score?
Aye, you didn't want people to hang up too quick, right?
It was horrible. That's one of the worst experiences of my entire journalistic career, was having to try to do that.
It's what we did for news, right? So when you and I were kids, you know, you would get Pink Times on a Saturday to get everybody's scores.
I know.
You don't go to your phone and get the answer to every question in the world that you can now, right? And then through that period in the 90s, you phoned up a hotline for a pre-recorded message to see.
And I did used to, it was Terry McGeady. I used to phone it up, you know.
I know. To get a match report. So life changes, Andrew.
Yeah.
Technology changes and people change.
Do you think for the better?
I'm quite optimistic. I think technology changes for the better. And I think, I genuinely believe that people are good. Genuinely believe it.
Yeah.
And Celtic people are good. They've got a kindness. They've got a good, strong social conscience. Whether they support Celtic FC Foundation or do something else, they might do it without any fanfare. But I think there's a characteristic about this football club that brings out the best in people.
Couldn't he finish on a better note? Thanks very much, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. We hope you enjoyed this podcast from Celtic Underground, and we will have more along soon. If you haven't already done so, and why not, please hop on over to theCelticUnderground.substack.com to register for the latest stuff from us to get delivered straight to your inbox or on the Substack app. We have added Andrew H. Smith to the team, and we believe it provides fantastic value of added content to our listeners and readers. Andrew has over 30 years' experience as a journalist, started his career with the Celtic View before moving on to the Scotland Sunday and the Scotsman. If you haven't taken out a subscription, please jump across. You don't have to pay, although there is a paid subscription offer, and obviously that would be greatly appreciated for the extra work that we are putting in and the extra time that Andrew is setting aside in working with us here at Celtic Underground. As I say, there will be more free-to-air podcasts along soon, but please jump across to theCelticUnderground.substack.com, and the is very important, to find out how you could get our up-to-date weekly additions to the content that we are providing. Anyway, that was Tony Hamilton with Andrew Smith. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
From up above, bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.